There are many ways people listen to Vision, including through a PC at work.
When you fire up your computer at work, go to vision.org.au/listen and click the Vision or V180 Listen Live buttons. You can also catch the latest Vision National News Bulletin and enjoy a growing range of on-demand podcasts from the same page all while you work.
However, and wherever you listen to Vision, you can be sure that the announcers, programs and music will help you look to God daily.
Life, culture and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
For regular listeners, you'll know that we've sought to address the growing mental health concerns that are facing Australians today. And today we're going to explore what's known as moral injury and how in this changing world, Christians face what we might describe as a clash of conscience. And all Australians face what we might describe as a clash of conscience. Well, it's the condition that comes when our conscience or our moral compass is damaged when we witness or fail to prevent acts that transgress our own moral beliefs, our values, or our ethical codes of conduct. It was originally coined regarding returning military personnel when they've come home from conflict zones. But the same term can apply as people are either coerced or mandated and a person's convictions are compromised. When a person's conviction is compromised, moral injury may be suffered. It's a concept that applies in a number of dimensions today, whether it is in the health concerns around vaccination or on the range of pro-life issues that Australia faces. Our special guest today, Associate Professor Harvey Ward, says the difference between a conviction and a mere opinion is that an opinion may change without much consequence. But those convictions we hold are a line one draws in the sand of the soul and is guided by faith and a certainty of what is right and wrong in a specific situation. Dr. Harvey Ward is an obstetrician and gynecologist. He describes himself as a musician, a poet, and an apologist. He's also a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Fellowship of Australia, and a special welcome along to 2020 to Dr. Harvey Ward.
Thank you so much, Neil, for your generous introduction.
And Harvey, I might just say, and thank you for a note a little earlier, that you actually delayed the induction of labour for one of your patients, a mother who's expecting, so that you can fit in this discussion. So I probably should thank that mother who's actually given up the opportunity to have that induction start an hour early. But thank you.
No, she was very happy to do that. And that good news all seems to be going very well.
Harvey, let's get into this topic today and moral injury and perhaps just into the context of Christians and the history of the church. Many a Christian martyr has faced the lions for holding convictions that they just would not change. Is there something here that's something special that Christians need to understand about how we hold on to our moral compass, how we hold on to a direction in our lives and those convictions we have without having this moral injury? Is there a way you can describe those things from history?
Well, certainly. Thank you, Neil. There's been conflicts of conscience that have been part of the Christian church right from the very beginning. People doing things that they would believe that would be wrong, but feeling they're being coerced to do them. We look in the Old Testament, for example, at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who refused to bow to a tyrannical king demanding worship. And their consciences were seared, and they decided to stand up and, of course, draw the line in the sand. And the story is recorded for posterity. There will be consequences for drawing a line in the sand. And when your convictions are based on your faith and informed by your faith, they will clash with the world's principles. In medicine, this has been very recently addressed with things like deciding in Nazi Germany to experiment on people who were Jewish, or to take the lives of people whose lives were regarded as worthless. And even up to date now, in certain areas in the report from China that transplant surgeons were able to remove organs without patients' consent. Would there be a conscience clause saying, can you opt out of that? Well, in those circumstances, a Christian doctor would refuse and pay a very high price. So we are being confronted daily by assaults on what we believe to be right and wrong.
In fact,
others in power.
In fact, doctors are right in the middle of what are happening in many of the changes that are going on around Australia now. When it comes to abortion, when it comes to the issue of euthanasia, doctors are, in fact, I'm imagining here, likely to be, if not already, coerced into holding the government line rather than going with what we might describe as a biblical conscience, a view of life which has a high ideal. Any thoughts here?
Well, that's right. We will operate according to a code of what we think is right and wrong. I think it's important to recognize that all codes of conduct are confined within legal constraints. And so whoever gets to make the laws, in other words, they decide what's right or wrong, they will ultimately hold power and insist that judges interpret the law and the military and police enforce it. So if a law is passed which contradicts our conscience, then we have to evaluate whether we're going to obey it. Now, there's a cost for doctors. They may be deregistered, they may be disciplined, they may be reprimanded, they may have their license to practice removed, they may be jailed if the transgression is perceived as severe enough. And the Medical Board of Australia's Code of Conduct says that good medical practice is patient-centred and includes being culturally aware, and we must not impose our values on patients if the procedures are legal. So we've seen the law change over time here in Australia, unthinkably perhaps over the last 5 to 10 years. Being aware of a right not to provide or directly participate in treatments into which you conscientiously object, informing your patients and colleagues of your objection, but not using your objection to impede any access to treatments that are regarded as legal. And this puts a lot of patients, a lot of providers, in a difficult situation, whether they should refer patients or not. I think one can always refer a patient to discuss a contentious type of treatment that may be legal but to which you conscientiously object, and say, well, you must discuss it with this other individual and it's up to you. I'm not necessarily referring you for the procedure, but you'll need to discuss it with someone else because this is my position. I think most Australians will be happy with that, and most of the regulatory authorities would be happy with that.
I wonder whether those regulatory authorities are taking into their consideration where Christians might stand on a whole lot of these issues, because it does seem to me that there's a lot of imposed ways that government will be expecting, especially doctors, to behave under these new legal environments. So when the government is imposing its values on the people, and you might say, well, that's just a normal thing, that's what government does, doesn't it? But when the values contravene God's revealed truth, is that where we've got a real problem, Harvey?
I think that's where the church has an obligation to be the conscience of the nation. And always has been. Prophets of old had to step up against despotic kings and often get killed because they spoke the truth, sometimes very harshly, to them. John the Baptist lost his head because he pointed out a moral failure in King Herod's wife. So it's not without consequence that individuals put their head up above the parapet and declare, in fact, what God says is right and wrong, should override what any government of the day says is right or wrong. Now, there's some very clear-cut areas, and many of them are to some degree grey. And I think to get to the issue of moral injury, we have this inner compass to which we've been formed our conscience through the Word of God, through wrestling through these issues that affect our particular profession. And then when it comes up at odds to the prevailing opinion, and we find ourselves forced to participate in, then it's like being in the army, being forced to do acts that you morally feel culpable for doing, but you were ordered to do them. And the Nazi defense often was, I was just following orders. Yes, I could see it was wrong, but I was being a good soldier and I was following orders. There comes a point where you say, I'm not going to follow orders. Or if you do, you inflict on your soul injury of compromise. And this is the moral injury issue that we could discuss in more detail.
Well, what a wonderful opportunity to hear the heart of a doctor in what's going on in some of the developments we're seeing in Australia. When the government legislates that you must do something their way and a contradiction to what we understand as revealed truth from God, the sorts of things that happen to the individual if you are coerced and you give in and you do what the government says, which is contrary to your faith, the sorts of effect that come with this moral injury, how can you describe some of those sorts of things, Harvey?
Well, the term was originally coined by a researcher by the name of Shea, but expanded by Harold Koenig at Duke University, where he formalized an inventory, an emotional inventory of people who had sustained a similar situation to post-traumatic stress disorder, sleeplessness, thoughts of helplessness, loss of appetite, physical depression, and suicide, where individuals had to live with themselves after compromising. And the scale of the condition was really quite severe, and obviously veterans had committed suicide or had attempted, had slunk into depression, and he discovered that a significant amount of moral injury was sustained. And then he extended it to health workers and found the same sort of thing. So there's now an index which you can use to determine whether or not individuals in the health worker industry, nursing staff, doctors, and so on, who may have sustained moral injury. And it's helpful to categorize it, and it's starting to be looked at as a proper disease category.
This is 2020 with Neil Johnson, helping you make sense of life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Our talkback line is open on 1-800-316-316. As I said, we're in the deep end, and I might encourage you to lean in a little closer to the radio as we talk about the effects that come on an individual who is suffering moral injury. Our special guest is Associate Professor Harvey Ward. Harvey, when we talk about this moral injury, and given your background, and you've been able to reflect beautifully on what happens to people who are in the medical profession, and it's not just doctors, but it's nurses, it's people who are in all sorts of medical professional roles. But as we expand this, of course, there are police who suffer from moral injury when they're forced to do things that go against their moral compass too. How does it affect police, do you think?
Well, I have a lot of patients who are policemen, policewomen, and they have expressed difficulty in carrying out their enforcing the law. They don't disobey their law, but they have crises of conscience as well. Can you imagine if they would have to arrest people who are peacefully protesting or follow a dictate that they are not on board with, but feel they have to because that's their duties? And this is the in the military as well, soldiers who were in Afghanistan who were given orders to do their job, given parameters, by the way, they had to do them, but of course the parameters don't extend to all possibilities and they have to use their judgment, and they may be criticized for their judgment and held to moral account, as we have heard with the Defense Force. So in all walks of life, one is conscience-bound to obey your moral compass. And you can imagine this could be extended to teachers or politicians whose morals are offended, but they have to horse trade in order to get their particular pet law over the line. And I'm sure a lot of this happens right the way around the country in all professions.
A lot of people have been concerned about the vaccine mandates and what they're seeing as a coercion for people who don't want to receive a vaccine, but in fact, because they're mandated to do so, some are actually losing their jobs, or they're not getting the hours that they thought that they would, or there's all sorts of restrictions coming on people. I mean, retailers are turning away unvaccinated people, not allowed to serve them. There's all sorts of issues around the vaccine issue. I wonder if you've got any enlargement on that.
Yes, that's the poison chalice. vaccine mandates, of course, are all the rage at the moment, and there's a lot of resistance to getting the vaccine, which has been, to the best of the scientific community, as best research as it could. They can't give 100% guarantees to anyone that, one, the vaccine is going to work for them, or two, that they're not going to have a side effect from getting it. And yet the evidence suggests that most people will do well with it, and that it will give, to some degree, some decent protection against getting severe COVID. Having said that, there will be people at either end of the spectrum, some of which might have bad side effects, even deaths, and others who will have no side effects and it not be effective. So the debate rages, and public health orders are incredibly difficult to get correct. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't when you make public health directives, because there are people either side who will have strong opinions. So I believe that the vaccine mandates are a touchstone for this particular issue of moral injury. What do people do if they decide not to get the vaccine? And I have members of my own family. The consequences are so draconian and so horrific that they are forced to choose between a possible side effect they can't anticipate and the restrictive lives and restriction of freedoms if they don't get the vaccine. So I can understand people's frustration. Doctors who provide medical certificates that are dodgy or spurious may end up getting punished for attempting to circumvent public health orders and may pay the price of deregistration. Doctors who speak out with any concerns that they might have with vaccines or questions about them may also face censure. So it's a difficult time, and there are channels that we can, as doctors, go through processes to display our concerns if we have them. So I think the vaccine mandate issue, I think there are a lot of people who have fallout, real moral injury and real practical physical injury from the consequences of either not getting vaccinated, refusing to get vaccinated, delaying getting vaccinated, or having side effects.
There are those, as you say, who are more affected than others. Some very happy to get the vaccine, as you say, and from the health issues, and you can juggle how the facts look, and you can look at, see what's happening internationally, and you can have some level of confidence in a vaccine. But there are always going to be those who'll say, I can't bring myself to be vaccinated. Now, if we're talking about moral injury in all of that, and going against your own conscience on these things, come back to what originally this concept of moral injury started with, was post-traumatic stress disorder for soldiers returning from the battlefield and suffering issues around depression and suicidal ideation. Are these things perhaps, even as we talk about moral injury, partly responsible for the challenges we're seeing in depression and rising suicide ideation today? Is that too big a connection to draw?
No, I don't think it is a too big a connection. I think there's an element of this where, as most Christians in Australia would have recognized, that over the last years, the prevailing cultural ethos would have been at least basically Christian, would follow biblical teaching, definitions of right and wrong, definitions of all kinds of fundamental building blocks of society, such as family, man, woman, and so on. They've all come under the microscope for redefinition, and legally too. So the legal profession has, at the lead of Parliament, redefined a lot of the terms you would take for granted as being clearly right or clearly wrong. And so many Christians in Australia are listening to the prevailing opinions that are coming out of Parliament, coming out of pressure groups, and feeling mystified that things they held to be correct are under challenge. And if they proclaim that they are still correct, could face censure. Coming back to the medical profession, again, the right to die or the right to kill the unborn, those have been two major issues that have affected the medical profession most recently. And thankfully, the conscience clause has been injected into the legislation because many doctors will refuse to do what may be regarded as legal and regarded as healthcare. But there are some prices to pay for that. And so the injury they sustain may affect their practice. They may not be able to carry on working in their field of training. And the very real consequences of that is a community loses a doctor or a nurse. A family loses its breadwinner. A spouse may have a partner that's now depressed and is difficult to connect with. They may suffer financial injury. So this moral injury has very serious practical consequences. And I'm pretty sure many listeners are resonating with this. Their consciences are being challenged. And what do they do about it if they've compromised? In history, if we look back at the early church in Carthage, when people were sent to the lions for not complying with the Caesar's dictates, and they were killed in the arena for sport, there were those that did compromise, renounced their faith, and then were freed to join society as citizens. But then when the persecution died down, they asked for readmission back to their Christian brothers and sisters. And they had compromised and they had denied Christ in the face of pressure and now wanted to come back and suffered moral injury. The church who had survived this and had stayed, had held the line, were reluctant to let them back in because you guys shouldn't have communion with us. You've compromised. You've sold your soul. And if we look at the two examples we've got in Scripture, we've got two men, prominent men who were in the apostles, who both compromised. Peter, who denied Christ to the people around him, and Judas, who ultimately betrayed Christ. And both of them had serious regret and remorse, but one turned to suicide and the other one turned to repentance. And look at where he was elevated. Judas has been consigned to the history's scrap heap of the people that failed morally, but didn't believe God could forgive them. But Peter is, regarded as the rock upon which Jesus was going to build
wonderful
his
stuff,
church.
Harvey, we'll try and enlarge on that because what tremendous biblical examples of how you deal with issues around moral injury. We're taking calls on 1-800-316-316. Let's squeeze in a call from Norman in Innisfail in North Queensland. Norman, thanks for waiting patiently. What are your thoughts quickly?
That's very kind of you. I applaud the direction of your conversation and it referred to two pieces of scripture that are very rarely observed. One reads that he who brings my creation to ruin will in turn be brought to ruin. And another that's quite profound, which was confirmed later on, is the evil one has opened his bowels on the oceans, upon the ocean, which refers to the oil slick that's being dumped on the oceans and seas of the world as a slick that's preventing the exchange of oxygen for CO2 in from the plankton. We're more or less smothercating ourselves, and the Father's revenge tribulation is not going to be directed towards the innocent, to his people. but to those people who have been rude and destructive upon his creation. So it's actually a day of rejoicing for us and a day of judgment.
Norman, I've got to cut in because we're about to go to news. You might be wondering just how important and how powerful it is to hold Christian convictions. We're talking about those things today with our special guest, Dr. Harvey Ward. And Harvey, before we continue on with our conversation and take this even a step deeper, let's take another call. Our talkback lines open on 1-800-316-316. Let's hear from Bernadette in South Australia. Hello, Bernadette. Thanks for waiting patiently.
Hi, Neil. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to speak, and I really feel for people in those situations, doctors, nurses, police, where they have to make those decisions. And I, as a Christian, my faith is everything. Jesus is everything to me. And this is a real crisis of conscience for me. And so it's like, plus I have a health condition. I've got high blood platelets, and I actually did see a couple of doctors and asked for an exemption. They said no. And I said, why? And they said, well, the only exemption is if you already have an injection and then you have an elliptic shock or something. And I just said, I don't think that sounds really good. So that's it, no exemption. And I just think that something's really wrong. And people shouldn't be forced to have something that they feel really so strongly about. And plus, if they've got health issues, it's like that's not taken into consideration, I think.
Bernadette. Good thoughts in there. Let's get a response from Dr. Harvey Ward. Harvey, as you're hearing Bernadette's heart, no doubt that's a reflection on what a lot of people are feeling right now.
Yes, certainly. And I would not want to get into specifics because, of course, it is a medical condition and there's always more to a full history that one has to take. To some degree, we trust the medical profession with all the medications we take and all of the opinions you get, sometimes don't. So I won't go into the vaccine-related issues with you, but I understand what a clash of consciences might have for you, and you're constantly having to weigh up whether or not you should compromise what you have believed and go ahead, or stick to your guns. I think what's really valuable is to seek a health professional who's well schooled in the science and is well drilled in their faith, and seek their help. I think it's important. Sometimes it's a factual problem that's an issue. Sometimes it's hearsay or opinions you might have because you've seen a few other examples of something not working out well, and therefore you feel it may happen to you, and that's your experience. And I think it's a situation you have to discuss in much more detail with your health practitioner. If they're not sympathetic, find another health practitioner who will listen to your concerns.
Bernadette, thank you so much for your call. I hope that's a helpful response to you. 1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation. Just on vaccines for just a few more moments here, Harvey, because people are obviously they're digging themselves in for not receiving a vaccine. Sometimes that's on a health issue. It's not necessarily a theological issue or something that you might feel as though you have responsibility before God. I wonder whether you've got any thoughts here on whether this is an opinion or a conviction that gets compromised when you actually do say, I'm going to dig in here for the long haul. I'm not going to receive a vaccination.
Yes, this is a contentious issue. I think you would need to get well informed with the facts, and they are out, they are available. I love vaccinations. I think they're an excellent addition, a gift from God to be given to us to protect us from microbes around us. And I think active immunization with pieces of bugs that have been modified, or passive immunization, taking antibodies from somebody that somebody else has made, are a gift from God. They, like surgery, are a way to roll back the effects of the fall and to restore life and health and longevity. So I'm not anti-vax at all. I'm I'm definitely pro-vax. I'm pro-safe vax, and that's, I think, what's important to distinguish. Not all vaccinations are the same. We know this. Not all manufacturing processes are relied upon. And so our ATAGI, or our Therapeutic Goods Administration, has been tasked with the responsibility of providing Australians with safe medications, and they're doing the best they can. It's important to recognize that they do want people to be protected. They don't want people to get sick and die unnecessarily. And I think that's an important position to be in. Regard them as a gift from God. I'm not saying the same thing for killing people. That's not a gift from God. But vaccines aren't perfect, and some people may suffer side effects. But generally, the intent is to heal and help. And I think it's a good principle to start off with.
Harvey, we would often think of the relationship between doctor and patient as being sacrosanct. And that's the sort of patient-doctor relationship that's been reflected in a lot of the international codes that have been produced over the years. So when you've got governments that are trampling over this sacrosanct relationship between doctor and patient, there's a principle that comes into play. So while we might be talking about whether there is a theological foundation or whether there's just a principle that we ought to hold carefully to, it's when that is trampled on, we potentially suffer this moral injury. Is that a fair way of describing how you might say this is a position I take because it is a principled decision?
Absolutely, and that's the very definition of being conscience-led. The ability to have a conscience is a spiritual aspect of our lives, which we don't deny anybody. We are signatories to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, that we should be a freedom of religion, freedom of thought, freedom of speech. But, of course, if you are free to believe, you can believe error, and you can act on it, and punish and injure people. So there are always some qualifications to that freedom. It's not just a completely boundless freedom. But having said that, if a position of conscience that you have may be deleterious to those around you, then the government may step in and say, look, you are putting other people at risk and putting other people in danger because of your belief, and we're going to override that and restrict your freedoms or punish you. And the Religious Freedoms Bill is up for discussion now. In fact, you'll be interviewing Michaela Cash. It'll be interesting to see what she has to say about it. There are those that feel that if we hold to a Christian worldview, that's at odds with current secular thought in a secular state, and the state must override it in all aspects. There are others that say, but there are aspects of it which culturally contribute to the vibrancy and diversity in Australian society. And so the opinions rock to and fro. But if the law punishes people on the grounds of their religious convictions, we are looking at legal precedents that are being set that scare others to have religious convictions or to live them out in the marketplace or the daily in their daily life. If I had a religious conviction that suggested that other races were insects and we could take out their organs and sell them to other people who were more deserving, and that was a conviction I had, then I would hope the government would use the sword to restrict my effect in the community around me, because it would be destructive. So again, where do we get our moral compass from, and how can we keep our moral compass in a way that most reflects God's moral compass for us, because that will be the most life-preserving and lifestyle-sustaining and healthy one. That's the convictions I have. And as a Christian, that's where I stand. I can do no other, as Martin Luther famously said.
Well, perhaps we are in for times ahead when the secular state endeavours to override our Christian conscience. And so we might come to how we respond to that. And before the news, I think we touched on Judas and Peter as a couple of examples in the scriptures of how the moral injury was dealt with there. For those who are feeling like they've compromised their ideals, they've compromised their God-given values revealed by God because of things that are happening in a coercive nature in the state right now, and perhaps we'll expect more of that. How do you think we respond in this way? What are your thoughts here, Harvey?
Well, I think primarily we should prepare ourselves for conflict inevitably. And secondly, once we've compromised and have suffered or put in a position where we may be sustaining injury, how do we approach that? And thirdly, once we've compromised, how do we actually get out of that? So primarily, teachers, schools, parents have to teach their children moral codes and not let the government take that over. And they must imbibe and teach a biblical worldview of right and wrong to their children. There'll be strong forces wanting to stop that, but I think that's a primary responsibility. And if you're armed with the Word of God, this will inform your conscience, and that would be the best protection when you encounter moral episodes of moral threat. There are moral dilemmas and moral situations all over the place that you may have to consider, and a clear conscience is what Paul says he had before the Roman procurator. I have a clear conscience before God and before men. Secondarily, if you are thrust into a situation where you are being forced to compromise your morals, you can't take a step back and not make a decision and say, I need time to think and pray about this and contact individuals with whom I trust morally. And thirdly, if you've compromised and are suffering the pains of guilt, asking for forgiveness from God, going to him on your knees and say, I've transgressed, like Peter did, wept bitterly, felt remorse, but then ask for forgiveness and recognize how you can possibly make some sort of restoration, and how could you bolster up your conscience on not being pushed to do this again. So there'll be that primary, secondary, and tertiary approach I think would be helpful.
Wonderful stuff. Let's take another call. Michael is in Toowoomba, Queensland. Michael, welcome along.
Yeah, how you going, Neil? And your guest, sorry, I forgot his name.
It's Harvey, yep. What are your thoughts,
Harvey,
Michael?
How are you? I'm just want to ask a question on your... There's obviously... my wife's been infected. She's a nurse, and she's now out of work because of the mandates that is happening across the country. A question I'd like Harvey to ask is, we've got two different opinions here. Both are saying scientific opinions. But the credibility of one side of the argument, saying that the vaccine is our silver bullet to get out of this, they're the same scientists who believe that abortion is right. They're the same scientists that would say that same-sex marriage is right, gender fluidity is right. They're also the same scientists are now telling us that it's okay to get rid of those people who are aged. So do you think the credibility of those scientists is diminished?
Michael, good thought there. Harvey, you're in the deep end here because can you tar everyone with the same brush of all of those different moral differences?
I've got to be careful with considering that every individual in scientific community is heading towards a destructive and unbiblical position. No, all of them have got very passionate arguments. They're not all guided by the same moral convictions, but have tremendously good scientific tools, have to deal with people in these situations all the time. So I'd be careful in tying them with all the same brush. I think you've got an obligation to look at what is coming out of the mouths of regulators and scientists and read them through a grid of Christian understanding. I wouldn't get into any of those individual topics, although I know all of them are red hot at this stage, but you're allowed to have some skepticism on all scientific utterances, and we in the scientific professions and in the clinical professions do this all the time. We have a look at what's being written and we criticize them according to rigorous scientific ideals, which actually should be. If we are in pursuit of truth, then truth will eventually win out. So I think we're to stick to what is true and what is noble and what is right and what is life-affirming, life-preserving. And if the science lines up with it, certainly, then we work with it. But we look through a glass darkly on all truth, all scientific and medical truth. So stick to your biblical convictions and question with biblical support assumptions that are being thrown at you. I think that's a very reasonable and safe position to work from.
Michael, thank you so much for your call, and I'll have to put a line under those calls. Time running out quickly. Harvey, when we talk about forgiveness and restoration, there are those right now who are thinking, I'm being challenged. My moral compass is being compromised. Preparing for the challenges that are to come. I think we're all agreeing that there's going to be some more challenges to our moral compass. How do you think about, and just a quick response here, but navigating a way forward, how do you think about doing that as a Christian believer?
Well, all of the wars in the middle of the last millennium that were from Protestants and people that were trying to be persecuted by the church had convictions about the way they had beliefs. And they schooled themselves and taught themselves the Word of God. They discussed the scenarios amongst themselves. They had cell groups. They had study groups who would prepare their fellowship of believers for what to do in the event of being challenged. And right the way throughout the ages, battles are won on their knees first before they're fronting the governors and kings and have to say what they're going to say. Jesus said, don't worry about what you're going to say when you are led before governors and kings. You'll be given the right words to say, or none, as in the case of Jesus himself, who was silent before many of his accusers. We may be asked to give an account of our convictions, and that we should be prepared to do with diligence. So steep yourself in the Word, discuss them in small groups, have scenario planning. What would you do if you were confronted with this? What would you do if you were told to put a bullet in someone's head as a soldier? What would you do if you were called upon to transgress a law? Think the thing through, discuss it, because the time may come when you'll be called upon to do that. And if you're well prepared, then you will have armed yourself ready so that when the answers are demanded of you, you can give them with gentleness and respect.
Well, Harvey, wonderful insights today. And for listeners, there will be a podcast of this conversation up earlier this afternoon. Associate Professor Harvey Ward. And let me just point people to certainly the CMDFA, the Christian Medical and Dental Fellowship of Australia. You can access Luke's Journal, which is a wonderful journal, and Harvey Ward is a contributor to that. You'll be able to read more about moral injury, and you'll be able to get real insight so far as some of the issues that are developing in the nation. Harvey, just wonderful getting your input today on 2020. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to share these thoughts with our listeners today.
Thank you very much, Neil. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.